previously aired on WDWS Radio, Champaign, Illinois.
And I am more than pleased. I've been bouncing off the walls for a week after I found out that we'd be able to get Bobby the Brain Heenan on as a guest. And Bobby, I really appreciate you coming on the show tonight.
Well, I had to keep you from bouncing off the walls.
Well, if you saw the dents I've been making, the people around here are happy too, believe me.
Well, thank you.
I really appreciate it. And got a copy of the book, Bobby the Brain, Wrestling's Bad Boy Tells All. Got a chance to look through the last couple of days. A great book, and a lot of wrestling fans have been waiting for someone to really tell some tales, and you certainly do in this one.
Well, thank you. And by the way, you know, I'm recovering from throat cancer.
Right.
So if some of the words don't come out real good, that's because some of the words I can't say real well yet.
Right.
That's why they gave us fingers.
That's right. And, well, I noticed that that part of the book is certainly deals with that, and I think folks were wanting to know how you're coming along.
Well, I'm fine. I'm doing better all the time, and I can eat and just have to take my time and little bites, but then that's why they have microwaves.
That's right. You enjoy it a little more.
But hey, I'm alive. I'm breathing. My wife's had her second bout with cancer in April, and she's over that again. So we're doing fine, and my book's in its third printing, and I get to talk on the radio every day, so I'm like, God, you couldn't get to have this much fun at Chicken Ranch in Vegas.
Maybe. I think so. When you first were diagnosed with this, it had to be, well, first of all, it's always going to be shocking to hear something like this, but when you made your living with communication to kind of have that turn around and basically try to kill you, I mean, really, that had to be just unbelievable irony.
Well, that never occurred to me. See, I wasn't doing anything because I was, when I was broadcasting, I was having trouble saying some words.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, I was diagnosed with TMJ. You know what that is?
Right, the jaw problem.
But I didn't know what it was.
Yeah.
And I've got a couple teeth missing on the incisor on the back. And I thought my jaw had shifted.
Mm-hmm.
And then after a while, my food started tasting metallic. So then I started having pains behind my right ear on the bone there.
Right.
So I went to a doctor and I went to someone I used to play baseball, Wade Boggs.
Yeah.
He sent me this Russian guy, and he kept shooting me with electricity for 4 hours a day.
He
felt good, just out of there. And then I went to another guy, and he told me to tone up for an hour a day. Wrap it around my neck, nothing he could do. And then they sent me to another ear, nose, and throat guy. And he reached down my throat, and he said, you have throat cancer. You have a 95% chance of having throat cancer and 80% chance of recovery. And I got up, and I walked around his office, and I got real clammy and cold and dizzy. I asked him, I said, how long do I have? He said, I don't know how long I have. So he sat me down for a while, put my feet up, and then it just hit me. I can't cut my own hair, I can't fix my car, and I'm not a doctor. So I'm going to do whatever they tell me. Thank God I'm out of wrestling and don't have a job that I'd have to take off from that and everything. So we do what we have to do. And I went to the hospital, I took my radiation, took my chemo. March 13th, they operated, took two lymph nodes out. He says, by next March, is however I'll be, is as good as I'm going to be. He says, I'm 75% now on the way. He says, and you're fine.
Well, that's excellent, Dad.
Basically, of course, he asked me to pay him if I could give him cash.
That's right. Cash first, and then worry about it. It's good to hear that you're bouncing back from it, and I didn't realize.
You told me not to buy any LPs.
Yeah, that's buy long, sell short. I'm sorry to hear about your wife going through a second bout of cancer, and that had to be just devastating on top of things.
Oh, yeah, and then my daughter got married in December, and I had my knee operated on July before that. Well, we've been busy.
Yeah.
We've been busy.
Keeping the doctors in the
I've seen more doctors than there is on One Life to Live.
More than General Hospital.
Yeah.
Well, it's good to hear that you're doing well. I've been reading this book, and a lot of the folks around here remember you from the days in Indianapolis as Pretty Boy Bobby Heenan.
Oh, yeah.
And we had some emails about that. Did you, when you were working in that territory, did you come through Champaign very often?
Oh, yeah, I wrestled in Champaign at some high school.
Centennial, probably.
Probably, and wrestled there all the time. And yeah, that was a regular stop. But the Indianapolis territory didn't go far from there. It didn't go like to Peoria. That was AWA.
Yeah.
Bernagagnas.
Yeah.
So we went to Champaign-Urbana area.
Yeah, and then your career, of course, starting off basically kind of as a what they would call now as a backyard wrestler. I mean, you basically just took to it on your own.
Yeah, yeah. We used to put up ropes in the garage and have our own matches, and then a guy with a radio station in Indianapolis, him and I promoted a fight at St. Rita's Gym and gave the money to the boxing program there. And I was a masked man. Yeah, that's before I was even in the business.
It's really something to see how you go from such rich in a very young age to where you were walking out with, riding out with Andre the Giant at the biggest wrestling spectacular in the world. That's a long way to go, man.
You know, and then I got a picture of me shaking hands with Dan Quayle.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's a lot of different ways you can go.
You can go all sorts of ways.
Right.
Yeah. It's a great tale. And what I really enjoyed about the book is that it's honest. You don't have to, you know, vicious details about it. Some people, when they call them tell-alls, balls.
Well, I wanted the book not to be like the Bible or War and Peace. Or didn't want it where you had to turn back to page 58 to finish a story. I wanted it to be like you and I were sitting in some sports bar talking,
yeah.
And you mentioned something I told you about that, which led into something else, and that's just the way I wanted it to be.
Yeah, it's a great read. And anybody who knows Bobby Heenan, you don't have to be a wrestling fan to know the name Bobby Heenan. I should just go and pick up the book, Bobby the Brain, Wrestling's Bad Boy Tells.
There's two girls in Tijuana that know the name Bobby Heenan and have never been to a wrestling match.
Well, they might know the name, though. I don't know about wrestling, or at least that type of wrestling. The situation here with wrestling as it is now, and I know you weren't particularly happy with the way things went near the end at WCW, where I don't think anybody was particularly happy with the way that went. Do you see things improving with wrestling now with maybe just one person in charge, Vince McMahon?
No, because everybody needs competition.
Yeah.
If there was only one place to rent a car and it was Hertz, they could really make it hard on you.
Yeah.
And everybody needs competition to make themselves better. If there's no competition, you become complacent. And that's what Vince needs. He needs competition. He's a great fighter. But I'm not really sure, Cindy, I'm not really sure the direction the way wrestling is going today is anything that I care for. I was brought up in a different era. And now, at the front door! Excuse me.
That's okay.
Now it's too much sex, too much... And there's no storyline. I used to like it when a guy did an interview. He had a match. He jumped down, did an interview. Another guy came out. The promoter separated him. He built the match. Then you came back in a tag match. Then you went into a cage. And you built a storyline in the program that could last you 6 months to a year. And that was fun. Now you go through nine tables and you walk out. They strip somebody down, tank their butt with sour cream, and handcuff them to a goat. But there's a market for that.
Yeah.
It must be, because as long as there's channels, you know, they have to have programming. But I don't think wrestling will ever be like it was, that the popularity, for a simple reason. Everybody knows now that it's not real. And I believe there were a lot of people knew it then that it wasn't real. But they also know that Blackstone, the magician, does not make an elephant disappear. It's magic. It's a trick.
Right.
Once you know the trick, you won't come back anymore because you know the trick.
Right.
So that's why I say in the book that the magic's over. It's a shame, too, because it was such a fun fucking job. It was really cool. I thought everybody should do anything they want to know about it. Because through their money, I put my daughter through college. I buried my mother and my grandmother. I fed my wife and I with it. And I was very lucky to be able to do and have done what I've done.
It's even when you started off with primetime wrestling and... If folks who don't remember that show, they should. It was a show where you basically had matches that were other parts of the country, a house show or a road show, where if they came to town, I wanted to see it because you never know, it might show up on the show. You got kind of a taste of what a live show was about. Now it is so made for TV that the house shows have got to go down.
Yeah. Plus another thing, even though now that they're for sure it's not real.
Yeah.
So if you want something real, you got cops.
Yeah.
You've got most dangerous videos.
Yeah.
You've got a war coming up here in a couple of weeks. You got snipers. You got kidnappings. You got court TV. You got people frying in the chair. They're not going to come out anymore and spend that money for parking and merchandise and buy a $10 kid a Macho Man hat and a Duggan board and a couple of beers and everything. You got to take a second mortgage on the house.
Yeah, that's true. And that's with every sporting event. And
everybody's into computers today, and they're single family. It's rough out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, when you started, especially with the AWA, and you were managing all the different wrestlers, would you have thought that you'd have gotten to the point where internet people could log on, basically turn on their phones, and find out what you were going to do 2 weeks later before you even knew about it?
No, there wasn't anything like that in those days. I mean, we could do this. We could do the same finishes in all the towns because no one knew. We could do the same match in every town, like an AWA. Minneapolis would be the same. Milwaukee would be the same. Green Bay would change a little bit because of Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
Denver would be the same. Winnipeg would be the same. San Francisco, Salt Lake, Vegas, they'd all be the same because no one traveled.
Yeah.
And since they didn't travel there, they knew no one there, so they couldn't call anybody there.
Right. And nowadays you've got the results of television tapings out way in advance, and
by the time you get to the building, the guy sweeping up the urinal tells you what you're going to do tonight.
There's no mystery involved anymore in these matches.
No, and that's why I say the magic's gone.
It's unfortunate. I remember watching when you first came over to the WWF, and things kind of exploded. Were exploding at that time. From there, you became basically when people think wrestling manager, the first name is Bobby Heenan. Now, when you first started managing, what was the name that came to your mind as far as, did you base yourself on anybody in the business?
Yeah, a little bit. See, I went into it with a different mentality.
Mm.
Most managers in those days were guys that were too young or too little to wrestle, mm, or too old.
Right.
Either wore a tuxedo, carried a cane, or sunglasses. I said to myself, I know how this works. These guys are green or they're old. They all look alike. I'm going to be different. I'm going to manage like a wrestler and wrestle like a manager. Which means, I'm going to bleach my hair blonde managers.
Right.
And then I'm going to wear shoes with sequins. Myself, I'm going to do it right. If anybody said, why do you wear them? Simple. So I can get away from the opponents faster. And that's what I said. Now, when I'm outside managing, my man's hit, I'm going to react. When he's getting the hell beat him, I'm going to be on my feet. Because I have an investment. Supposedly in the guy. I'm not just going to sit on a chair and wait for nothing to happen. I never like sitting on a chair, because that way your back's to the people that don't like you.
That's right.
And you can't move. You can't see them coming. I like to be up moving around.
And there's several accounts of that in the book, too, where the audience got a little more involved than you would like.
Well, you know, they did the other night at the ball game at Comiskey, remember? They jumped
the
first base coach, and the coach today that knocked the kid down at the football game last night.
That's right.
He's in jail. Everybody's getting more. You know, people are hungry. There's a war out there. They're talking about germ warfare. Everybody's in a different kind of mood than you've ever seen before.
Yeah.
I just don't know where the business is going to go. But there'll be a market for it. But I'm not interested in that aspect of it.
And we're talking to Bobby the Brain Heenan in his book, Bobby the Brain, Wrestling's Bad Boy Tells All. It's out in its third printing now?
Yeah, third printing. Wow. And I'm going to write another one.
And you're going to have a follow-up.
Yep.
Well, I can tell you this. This book certainly tells folks a lot more about you, the person, than I thought maybe it might have done in the beginning. And certainly brings you down an interesting path to where you basically find a family you didn't know about.
Right.
Folks may not know this, but you were basically raised in a single-parent household.
With my mother and grandmother.
Right.
And
didn't know that you had some brothers out there. And later in life, here you, all your interviews, you talk about family, having families to pass. Here you go, get one.
Yeah, now I'm stuck with 85 more Christmas gifts. Bunch of deadbeats.
Well, tell me, what's that like? I mean, here you suddenly here's a big part of you that wasn't there before.
Well, because it wasn't there, it never bothered me.
Yeah.
I just wanted my wife to see if he can get a picture of my dad, what he looked like, from some employee ID or something.
Mm-hmm.
if he wrote that 800 search or something, they sent back the information and gave us the address where he lived in Las Vegas. So we were out there for Halloween Havoc one year. I said, let's drive by. We went by and sat across the street, and I said, I'm going to go in. I said, there's a kid on the porch playing a banjo. We're getting out of here. So we went in and introduced ourselves. And Cindy, I said, tell him we're looking for some street. And put your butt on the hood of the car so they got to face me. I'll be sitting in the car. And a woman came out, and she looked like she could have been my sister, and she was talking to my wife. And then a guy comes out, and he kind of looked at me and looked back a bit and went and got a map and was trying to find this made-up street for Cindy. And I was thinking, man, these are really nice people. So we get in the car, and they said goodbye, good luck. And I told Cindy, I said, I'm going in. She said, let's go to Denny's first. So I choked now on a bone. So I told them who I was, showed them my passport, showed them all my ID, and told them some things that my mom had told me about my dad and everything. He said, welcome to the family. Done deal.
Well, that's got to be amazing. I mean, after all those years, suddenly your family tree branches a whole new section of leaves. It's
right, and you know, they never paid attention. They weren't wrestling people. They didn't watch wrestling. He said people would ask us if we knew who Bobby Heenan was, but we didn't. We don't watch it. My younger brother was a Catholic priest. He's an educator now at a Catholic high school in Las Vegas. My older brother, next step up for me, is a security guard at a Las Vegas hotel. He was air security on Air Force One for Johnson and Nixon.
Wow.
And my older brother lived 7 miles from me all these years.
it was just a hop, skip, and jump away. You never knew it.
Yeah. Now I'm stuck for 85 gifts.
Well, the holidays are coming up, so we'll try to sell you some more books here.
And they didn't watch wrestling. So he asked me, my older brother, he said, did you ever get hit over the head with a chair? I said, I've been hit over the head so many times with a chair, the top of my head smells like ass.
You've given a lot of injuries, a lot of blood, a lot of sweat, a lot to this sport. Do you think you've gotten out of it what you deserved?
Well, I sprained both ankles. I had my knee operated on. Broke my neck. Had my elbow operated on my ulnar nerve. I have I've hard use of my right hand. I have atrophy. I broke my collarbone. I've lost 2 teeth. I'm scarred up. I can't hear real good in my right ear. No, I think I've got about 20 good years left in me. No, I tell you something. If I didn't have fun doing it, I wouldn't have done it. Yeah. I could have always walked away. Guys always bitch now about the promoters. This guy's a jerk. He didn't pay it. I say, hey, there's the door. We're in this because we don't want to get up in the morning and have to go to Sears and move refrigerators.
Mm-hmm. Folks who get a chance to read the book will realize you basically fell in love with professional wrestling so early that there wasn't any choice.
No, it was that or, be a major D at a Matrix bar. I don't know.
Now, speaking of the neck injury, there was a situation in WCW that I remember watching very well. It was a situation where a wrestler Buff Bagwell, had an injury to his neck in a situation where a move wasn't performed right. What was going through your mind that time? Because you were obviously extremely upset when that happened.
Well, I wasn't sure if he really hurt himself or not.
Yeah.
Then I went down to the floor from our podium and looked around, and I looked at Doug Dillinger, security guy.
Mm-hmm.
I said, is he working? He said, no. So I went back and sat down, and I didn't want to say anything to Tony or Tanae because I didn't want them to say nothing because maybe his mom's home watching.
Right.
So I came back, and they said, how is he? I said, I couldn't get word. I said, but he looks like he's going to be all right. And then I realized I had to sell what was going on, so that's why I had to put that over. But I thought to myself, my God, that could have happened to me.
Yeah, it was...
And we're talking paralysis. I never had paralysis. I just had my little finger on my left hand was numb. And now my little finger on my right hand is numb. But that was from the neck injury, the broken neck.
Yeah, it was a move that was off the corner turnbuckle, and it was the head slipped out of a headlock, and as it came down, it was just like a professional football player hitting helmet to chest.
I was in Japan, but he was a little bit off on his time of arrival, and he landed with his leg in my face, and took my head to the left because when you're on the mat flat, you're not sitting up. I'm laying flat.
Right.
And there's no place to go.
Right.
So I thought I just pinched a nerve. But the reason I didn't have it operated on until 95 was the simple reason I tell everybody that wants to become a wrestler. Get yourself an education, a career, or a job that has benefits. Because I had no benefits. I couldn't get anything done because I had no benefits. I had no hospitalization.
And if you if you're out, you can't make dates. If you can't make dates, you can't make money.
That's right. Even, remember the Crusher?
Yeah.
He had to wait till he was 65 so he could get a quadruple bypass and a hip put in because he didn't have any insurance. We couldn't afford insurance. You know what they would have charged a wrestler for insurance?
Oh, it would have been insane. It would have been. Lloyd's in London wouldn't have touched you.
Boy, I know a girl in Cleveland wouldn't have touched you.
You know,
she'd touch anybody.
A lot of them won't touch me for various reasons, I'm afraid.
If you use some soap and water, that won't happen.
It's soap and water? No, I'll have to check that out. Hey, we're talking to Bobby the Brain Heenan, and Bobby, again, I really appreciate you coming on the show. It's been, I want to thank you for all the fun over the years, although you've left little pieces of you everywhere you went. It's certainly been a great deal of fun watching you.
I wouldn't change a thing. A guy asked me today, he says, what's your favorite part of the book, and what's the favorite part of your wrestling career? I said, my favorite part of the book is what my wife and daughter say about me.
Yeah.
My favorite part of my career was every day, because every day was different. No two days were the same. It was the most fun life I could have ever had if I only had insurance. But no, really, every day was different.
Well, you...
I was lucky to have what I have.
Well, you ain't done yet.
Oh, no, I have another 40. I can't do this.
You got another book to come out. Is it going to be is the second book going to be kind of a follow-up, more stories from the road, or?
Yeah, I think that more stories and some other little twists. I got some other pictures that people haven't seen yet will be in there. I think I want to talk a little bit more about the money scale in the business and how the women were treated and the midgets and how referees are treated.
Yeah.
And, you know, how it really is horrible to have a bad match, how good it feels to have a good match. And some of the names from the past I'll just throw out there and people can remember them. You know, like, let's say Pat O'Connor, you know. Mm-hmm. A lot of guys didn't like Pat O'Connor because he owned the territory of St. Louis. So.
Yeah, well, we'll find out more about that when it comes out. And I just want to say, too, you must have had an incredible wife to go through this life with you. Going on the road all the time and not being at home, it must be amazing.
Well, if I'd have been home all the time, I probably wouldn't have been married more than a half hour. I remember one of the guys I managed, Joe Tommaso, of the Assassins, he told me, I like to come home from the road early some night and surprise my wife. I said, what do you do? He says, I ring the doorbell and run around the back and stay and see who leaves.
Bobby Heenan, we certainly appreciate your time. And again, when the next book comes out, can we have you on again?
You can have me on even before it comes out or anytime you want. You got the number, give it a call.
Appreciate it, Bobby.
Okay, guys.
Take care now.
Take care.